Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Tommy Tiernan, good afternoon. You're very welcome.
Well, Brendan.
Tommy, you're a busy man. So, first up, you're going to be acting in The Abbey, no less, in The Cave, a new play by Kevin Barry. Tell us about the play.
Set in the caves of Caish, somewhere in South County Sligo. And it's about a family who never got a chance. Environmentally and genetically, the odds were always against them. And I think it's the last hurrah of a couple of desperados. That's my sense of it. There's a James Joyce came up with this great word, roaratorio. And there's a sense of that in the play for me. Kevin's language is so magnificent. You know, it's kind of it's earthbound, but it's skyways. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
it's kind of,
absolutely. Yeah,
it's kind
yeah.
of. It's,
I'm thinking of the last book. Like, it's like a lyrical flight of fancy, but also like gritty of the soil as well. Yeah.
If Patrick Kavanagh took hallucinogenics. If Heaney was tripping.
That yeah.
So that's my sense of it, is that it's an exuberance of words, which is it's a pleasure to say. You know what I mean? It's a delight to have those words in your mouth on stage. And then it's the extremity of these characters, like these, I see people like them on the streets of Dublin when I'd be walking down towards the Abbey, you know, and I see people who I have the sense never really got much of a chance. And the odds were always against them in some way.
Yeah.
And these are kind of rural versions of those types of people. And this is their, this is their roaratorio. This is their chance to have a platform and be heard. And it's also very funny. Kevin is a natural comic, you know. So lots of jokes, lots of hilarity. There's a bang of... I'm kind of always hesitant to impose stuff on other people's work, but you could say there are elements of Laurel and Hardy, elements of Samuel Beckett, elements of John B. Keane, all kind of churned out and thrown up onto the Abbey stage in an entirely new way. So it's kind of it's familiar and new at the same time, if that makes sense. And it's exciting.
Yeah. What attracted you to doing it?
As soon as I heard that Kevin had written it, I said yes.
Is that it? Yeah.
Yeah. So you kind of, you know, there are people who you commit to because of their previous work, and you just go, yeah.
Yeah. And do you
just
you,
go for
you
it?
You get him, do you? You get him in a certain way.
There's familiarity there. Like, say for example, if Neil Jordan said he was doing a film, a lot of actors would go, yeah, don't need to see it. I'm doing that. If Bob Dylan said he wanted to write a song with you say, I'm up for that.
Okay.
And Kevin Barry's one of those people that where you just go, yeah, the guy's gifted, and I like the cut of him, so I'll give it a lash. And then to be working with people like Aaron Monaghan, Judith Roddy and Katrina McLaughlin is I have been placed amongst thoroughbreds, theatrical thoroughbreds. And that's a pleasure. That's a privilege, actually. So I'm up for the crack of it, like.
And what's the buzz for you with acting?
What's the buzz?
Yeah.
It's imagination. It's getting to imagine. It's playing with words. It's costume. It's being on stage, getting the attention and energy from an audience, and what does that energy and attention give you the ability to create? So that's it's fascinating. That's like a sporting encounter.
Yeah, because a lot of people might think that for someone like you, who, well, A, right, two bits, right? One is you're normally doing your own thing, right?
Yeah.
So now this is an ensemble thing where you can't be selfish. I think you have to be quite generous when you're acting with other people, do you? And they have to be generous back. That's different.
That's quite a loaded statement, Brendan. I don't know, there's a moral judgment packed into that.
Do you feel it? No. It's cultural criticism is what it is. Cultural analysis. Yeah.
Reviewing my performance before you've even seen it.
Yeah. It is different for you though, yeah?
But sure, I've had enough of being on stage on my own. I've done 25 years of it, like.
Yeah.
There are no more mysteries for me in being on stage on my own. There's adventure, but I'm not... I've had my fill of that, like. And now I want to tell other types of stories. Now I want to be involved in other expressions of Irishness, other inquiries, and other languages. That's what I want now.
Okay,
that's the crack of it.
Is that just for now, or do you feel that's a general shift you're making, maybe away from the idea of stand up?
There's some stand up stuff coming up. Like I'm down in Cork doing some shows in the Marquee during the summer, and I'm doing the Ivy Gardens Festival in Dublin as well. But after that, I wouldn't have any plans for it.
Really? Are you getting sick of it? Yeah.
It's not that I'm sick of it. It's just that you naturally make instinctive decisions. So without having the next 5 years planned out, someone says, do you want to do this now? And you go, yeah. And while you're doing this, you can't do those other things. That's fine. And whatever the future might bring is beyond my control. But it's all a delightful privilege to be able to choose and say, well, you know, if I want to do another stand-up tour, I can do that. Or if I want to do a play by Ionesco in Cavan, I can do that. Or, you know, if I want to try some Shakespeare in Galway, I can do that. It's all just magnificent indulgence, which I'm grateful for.
So the second part of my question then about the play thing, and again, no judgment here, but in many of the things you do, the TV show, the stand-up and everything, you're so yourself, right, that is acting like doing someone else. Yeah.
I don't worry too much about character and becoming somebody else. That's not what my focus is on. In a technical way, it's very confusing for me, like trying to be an actor. It is, and I get lost in theory.
Yeah, because I don't think most of us who don't act don't understand what acting is, really. Like, what do? Do you get out of the way and channel the...
Maybe,
person?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's to be alive on stage. So that you're not just following instruction, that you're not just... I have to stand here, I have to stand there, I have to communicate this, that there's a sense of unpredictability about what's happening on stage.
Even though you're doing the same thing every
day. Yeah, so that's the challenge.
Yeah.
That's the challenge with stand-up, which is to... that it's fresh every time. So how do you make it be fresh every time? What's at risk? Every time you walk out on stage, what's at risk? Where's the chaos? Can you embrace the chaos and deliver something to the audience at the same time? I think they're exciting questions. You know, wasn't I very clever in choosing this way of life? Do you know, my father and the generations that came before mine, they were men for whom work had... there's a means to an end. I will work so that I can pay my bills. A lot of us had fathers who got up every morning and mightn't have been delighted with the job that they have chosen. And for some reason, we arrived with a kind of a brattish, self-centred, instinctual refusal of that. And we kind of said, no, I'm going to do what feels good. And I think it's a fantastic way to spend time. And it's daft to be getting paid for it. But it's a wonderful way of being alive with people, exploring stories. Like, It's kind of like going to therapy on behalf of people who don't exist. It's magnificent. And then the end thing is that when the audience come in, that you have a story that's worth telling, that they sit there in the dark and they go, geez, what I have, that they have that sense of unpredictability and jeopardy. But they're aware of the skill of the performers in the sense of there being that this. I remember Marie Mullen from Druid Theatre Company telling me one time that she said, we decided very early on that irrespective of what play we were doing, we would work hard at it. So that gives the audience some sort of assurance that these people aren't casual in their approach. That these people are taking the art form of play seriously. And I think that's what they do in the Abbey. And I think that what gives you the entitlement to say to people, come and see this.
So you work very hard to tighten this thing up with discipline and everything else, but then you want it to express some unpredictable chaos.
The example would be this conversation that we're having right now. So we had no idea what we were going to talk about. And we know that we have 30 minutes to fill. And we know we're responding and listening to each other. And if one person goes quiet, the other person starts talking. So there's a kind of a chaos in that we don't know exactly where this conversation is going to go. But there's a level of skill in the fact that we can both listen and we can both talk, and we're delivering some sort of distraction or...
You would hope so, wouldn't you? or else we're two middle-aged men crawling up our own fundamentals. Like, yeah, I'm not sure which it is.
Is this actually on the radio? Is this a rehearsal?
This is the trick, like, to forget we're on the radio, which is the greatest danger and the greatest liberation, yeah?
We're getting texts now. It's happening. Jesus, lads, people listening to
this. It's happening live as well, yeah.
So it's like that.
Yeah. There's no going back, Tommy.
No, it's done. Sure. Yeah. So we're halfway through it now. It's that thing of chaos between borders. I think that's what the sense of aliveness.
Yeah.
That's what's attractive. That's what's
invigorating.
And you
see, you need to be in something to get out of it as well. There needs to be the borders.
Of course.
Or else it's just this.
Come here. Are you being hard on us now, Ben? I think we're different quality here.
I can understand now a bit more about the other thing you're doing at the moment, which is Between Dog and Wolf. So you're doing a storytelling tour in September, October, and this is with a storyteller, Martin Shaw. People will have seen him on your show. Mm. What can people expect from that? What will that look like?
So Martin is one of the most generous and interesting storytellers around. Martin tells fables, fairy tales, stories from Russia, England, America, everywhere. I'm not sure what stories he's going to be telling, but that's his profession. He's a storyteller. And I've always been curious about Irish folk tales and why they seem so boring and why they seem dead. To me, to read a folktale in a book is reading its obituary. It's lifeless. There's nothing there. So it's about going back to stories like the story of the Tawn, the story of Mad Sweeney, the story of Usheen, and wondering, can you breathe life back into them? Can you make them unpredictable? Can you hold an audience's attention? And then there's the types of stories that people like Peg and Tomáso Cruachan would have told, kind of folk tales from an area.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really curious about not asking anything of the audience, not asking the audience to indulge me, not asking the audience to have patience while I get through this story. It's saying, can you make the story of the Tawn live again? Are you able to do that? And so, for example, I say if I'm doing a stand-up tour, they're often in big, boozy rooms. There's any amount of drink taken. There is a kind of a swelling expectation of crack. And that's phenomenally challenging. But I'm also interested in telling other stories on those types of stages. other dark, weird, holy, anarchic, pagan Irish stories. That's
but you want people to be quiet, yeah?
No.
Just is the boozy room? Are the boozy rooms getting challenging for you? Yeah.
The boozy rooms are challenging for anybody. Yeah. Ask a guard, man. The boozy rooms are challenging for anybody. Yeah. I don't want people to quiet. That's the thing. I'm not asking anything of them. I'm curious to see if I can bring folk tales to that environment.
Okay. It's funny, like, in a way, that's kind of almost avant-garde. Like, it's kind of a very... And in a way, are you going back more and more, which I think a lot of people are, there's this kind of revival of the old ways and a connection with the old traditions and all that kind of thing?
No, I've always had an interest in them. They're there. They're it's kind of a dead heritage. Do you know what I mean? These stories are they've been left kind of... atrophying, and it's about trying to breathe life back into them. But it's crucial that I've heard there are so many awful storytellers. There are so many people who their desire to be a storyteller is greater than their ability to tell a story.
Right.
And that's deadening.
Okay.
And
so you're going to beat the storytellers.
The what?
You're going to beat the storytellers at their own game. They'll be like, he's not even a storyteller and he's better than us.
You always come in at the end with a little kind of dig,
I know,
don't
I'm sorry,
you?
I don't mean them to be digs. I'm just trying to...
You can't help it, it's in your...
I'm a laugh.
There's a little dig. There's just a little dig.
Is it a dig, though?
It is.
Are you a bit defensive?
I'm not answering that question.
Come here. You take on a lot. You work very hard.
Does it look that way? I guess I'm busy.
Yeah. I mean, the story thing sounds challenging, for example. You'd be doing that in between stand-up comedy. A play, I know, is a very challenging thing to do, and the play's gone on for quite a while.
Yeah.
You like to keep busy, do you?
It never feels like hard work, but I would have to say it's in my nature to choose things that are kind of just beyond my reach. And I must be... My body must be kind of slightly addicted to the stress of that. Slightly, I'm so used. Is it cortisone or cortisol? I'm so used to that drug, that pressure. I can ride a motorbike and I'm not great at it.
Yeah.
But I think I do it because of the stress. I think I choose difficult things. And that's just part of the way that I'm wired. I get quite bored and I'm quite restless. And... it's in my nature to choose awkwardness. And it's not a decision. It's not noble. It's just my habit, you know.
And do you relax in between times?
I collapse, but only for like 20 minutes. And then I'm up again. I'm impossible to sleep with. Do you know, there's no peace in me.
Really?
Like, you know.
But that's exhausting, is it, all your life?
Yeah, but it is. But do you ever look at an animal like a small bird and say, Jesus, they must be wrecked? Because their heads, you know, and they're not. They're just, that's just who they are. So that's part of my metabolism is, you know, it's funny, I'm more relaxed now talking to you than I was beforehand. So maybe the relaxment is kind of in the work somehow. I don't know. I have no desire to understand it, really.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. You do kind of have a desire to understand, though, I think. Like, there's a kind of... I think going along with your work, has there not always been, would you call it a spiritual journey of sorts as well, yeah?
There's great curiosity. And that's very natural as well. So on the chat show... it's very easy for me to keep asking questions because I am curious about people. It's very easy for me to have long conversations with people I meet in the street and not to think that my curiosity is nosiness, even though it probably kind of is, but I'd be naturally curious, you know. I'd be great on Lifeline.
Yeah, your name has been mentioned.
Where
would you do it?
No, I couldn't. I'd find it very hard to fit that and the presidency in.
Yeah.
You know, I think it'd be...
Would you do either of them if you had to pick one?
Because I'd only do both.
You need to do one.
I'd only do both of them.
It So the presidency, you haven't ruled it out?
I've never even considered it.
Okay. Would you consider it?
No, I'm too young.
There is even talk that Michael Dee is kind of like grooming you as his successor.
I think he's far too intelligent for that. Okay. He's a gifted man, and I think my feeling is that we're all aware of his morality, his fearlessness in the stands that he's taken, his gift as an orator, and his integrity. And it would be, we've had 14 years of the most magnificent presidency, a president that we have been proud of. And it's not for us to imagine how the next presidency will happen, but...
Anyway, this time, not for you.
I think it'll be important to seriously and respectfully acknowledge the brilliance of his presidency and to say thank you.
Yeah.
And whoever, I don't know who the runners and riders are for the next one, but we will need to take a moment to genuinely thank Michael D. Higgins for 14 years of inspiring presidency. And how that will happen, I don't know, but I hope we get an opportunity to do it.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, I think that'll absolutely happen. But anyway, you this time for you is not the time, not yet.
Not with Live Line and the play and all that.
So, come here, you kind of brought us away from the spiritual journey towards curiosity there, which I appreciate as part of that. But, like, there is an actual spiritual journey as well, isn't there? Like, did I see you chant in the morning now? Would you be kind of a Buddhism tourist these days?
No, I do. I'd never say I am a Buddhist. I would say that I do it to varying degrees of... seriousness and application. But I was at
what does that look like?
Just means you're aware of the Buddhist precepts, you're aware of the obligation to meditate. That's it, really. But I that's what I do. In the same way that you know, you choose a sport and it has benefits. So I chose Buddhism and I said, okay, I will do that. And it suits me. It. I was in a. I went to two masses the other day. My son was making his confirmation, and my daughter was graduating from Salerno Secondary School in Galway, and I loved it. The mass was gorgeous, and the Bishop of Galway was mighty, and Father Dermid from Oran Mór was mighty, and they spoke soulfully and vulnerably and full of heart. And when I went to meet the Pope last year, I was overwhelmed by the beauty of the Basilica, St. Peter's. I was thrown down by the gorgeous intent at the heart of Christianity, which is love. The most beautiful, noble aspiration that we love one another. But for me to do Christianity it's not clear enough. It's too much baggage. We have been overloaded with Catholic hindrance, and it's not clear. And maybe that's why I'm so attracted.
You think for Irish people, like,
well, for me, it's too complicated. Yeah. It's just too many. It's too human.
Did you get a sense were you up close enough with the Pope to get a sense of him?
He let me touch him.
A handshake.
I touched him. Yeah.
And did you get any vibes off him?
No, I was there with a very wise woman, my wife, Yvonne, and we saw him kind of come into the room. And the sense that we both had was, this is not a holy man. This is not a saint. This is somebody who runs an organization. That was the sense we got off him. Now, that's not a derogatory thing. What I'm saying is that we didn't put the burden of holiness on him. He was a lovely, lovely human being. And it was nice to meet him. But I didn't get the sense I was meeting, you know, everything you say with Catholicism has kind of associations, a Padre Pio, a Mother Teresa, whoever the holy saints might be. And that was almost kind of reassuring. Here's a man who took the business of Catholicism seriously. So it was very, very nice to meet him.
Yeah. You know. Any sense of the new guy? What do you think of him?
Leo.
Yeah.
No. Is he a bit of a twerp? I don't know.
No. No, no.
There's a twerpish kind of thing to him, I think. Is it the glasses?
I think what you mean is that he looks like a regular person, maybe more than some popes do. The fact that he's American.
We're
and
a great double
accent.
I think the thing that comes across about Leo is integrity and decency and humility.
That's more like it.
Now, twerp is just a very casual way of saying that.
Tommy, your podcast with Hector and Larita, which was phenomenally popular. I think it's been gone about a year at this stage. Any sign of going back to that?
We might do. Only if we're drinking. We did these ones called...
Are you drinking?
Yeah, oh yeah. We did these ones called 3 pints, please, where we'd go to bars around the country and we'd each have 3 pints. And we'd record the conversation, and they were fun. That was a lot of fun for us.
2-3 points is kind of the sweet spot, isn't it?
In a way. Beautiful.
Like, that's the dragon you're chasing with the next 10, isn't it? Like,
it's lovely. I haven't had a pint now for a couple of weeks, and I miss it. I'm looking forward to. My favourite place to have a pint is in the hotel on Inisir at about 11 o'clock in the morning. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Just the one.
Just the one, yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned there's gigs over the summer, the July gigs in the Marquee in Cork. So I think there's tickets left for Friday, July 4th. Mm-hmm. Do you enjoy doing the Marquee in Cork?
It's a massive encounter, isn't it? Like, it's 4,000 people and it's a large hurrah. So that will take, that's not a casual event. So the preparation for that has to be right.
What will that look like?
I'm not sure, but that just means that you're open. That you're just open to, that you're not, you haven't decided before you've walked on the stage exactly what the gig is going to be. That you're open, that you're responsible to the fact there's 4,000 people there. And that you allow their energy to have an effect on you. So, yeah, that's not a casual thing.
Yeah.
It's funny because I'll probably do 2 small gigs beforehand just to get in the frame of mind for it. So I think I'm doing some kind of comedy club gigs around Galway, I think, just before it. But that's...
Warm up.
It's big, like.
Right, interesting. It's complicated kind of... Complicated balance, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, so the world premiere of The Cave by Kevin Barry takes place on June 6th in Dublin's Abbey Theatre. The production runs till July 18th. Then it's moving to the Galway International Arts Festival from the 22nd to the 26th of July. The Between Dog and Wolf storytelling tour has 17 nationwide dates. That starts in Roscommon on September 16th, ends in Dublin's Vicar Street on October 6th. And the Tommy Tiernan comedian in the Marquee, there are only tickets left for Friday, July 14th. And more details on all those shows on TommyTiernan.com. Tommy Tiernan, I enjoyed that immensely. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Brendan.
Email brendan@rte.ie.